This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So the difference here is that these antibodies were developed to protect against all three of the Ebola species, so not just one particular type of Ebola. So that's a very important difference.
That's University of Texas researcher Thomas Gisbert explaining the value of an Ebola treatment that's under development. Details coming up. Also, France, Belgium, the United States, and Britain have expressed concerns over the validity of the DRC election results. And today in Sudan, police fired on protesters marching in Khartoum and the city of Omdurman as they chanted demands for President Omar al-Bashir to resign. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, grumbling over the outcome of the DRC's presidential election, is spreading, with two regional organizations adding their voices to calls for a recount of the December 30th vote. Opposition candidate Martin Fayulu has appealed the results, claiming he's been cheated out of an overwhelming victory. The official count placed him second. Government officials have stood by the victory of opposition leader Felix Tshisekedi. He and President Joseph Kabila have denied allegations that they cut a deal that would allow Kabila to continue to play a large role in the government. France, Belgium, the United States, and Britain have expressed concerns over the validity of the election results. The International Conference of the Great Lakes Region and the Southern African Development Community have followed suit. The lack of confidence in the results has raised concerns over a return to the violence that has racked the country since it gained independence in 1960. A vaccine and therapeutic drugs have kept the most recent Ebola outbreaks from spinning out of control in the DRC. Now, a new drug holds more hope for treating people affected with the deadly disease, although human trials could be 2 years away. My colleague Paul Alexander speaks with University of Texas researcher Thomas Gisbert on the advantages the treatment could offer.
This particular intervention is a treatment. So what we're trying to do is mimic a situation where what do we do if somebody already has Ebola? You know, they walk into a clinic or a hospital with full-blown Ebola. You know, they're febrile. You know, they're vomiting. You know, they have, you know, severe illness. You know, if that's the situation, what do? Can we save that patient?
How does this differ from the other therapeutics that are currently being used in Congo?
Very good question. So it's actually a pool of two different monoclonal antibodies that target the Ebola glycoprotein. Now, where it's a little different is there are three different species of Ebola. There's actually five different species of Ebola, but three of them cause disease, significant morbidity and mortality in sporadic outbreaks in different parts of Africa. In fact, all of the technologies currently used that you're referring to have only been developed to combat one particular type of Ebola, which we call the Zaire species. But there's two additional species of Ebola that also cause significant disease in man. So the difference here is that these antibodies were developed to protect against all three of the Ebola species, so not just one particular type of Ebola. So that's a very important difference. The other difference is that all of the previous work, if you're familiar with ZMapp and some of the other technologies, they had to be used in multiple intravenous injections that occur over a long period of time. You know, it takes hours per injection, and so a lot of times it's difficult. You know, you give somebody an injection, get them to come back and get another one. Obviously, if you can keep them in a hospital, that's great, but we're talking about third world countries here, you know, in resource-poor settings. And, you know, giving that many IV injections, it's difficult, it's time-consuming, obviously dangerous. So this particular therapy only requires one intravenous injection, so we've cut it, you know, from 3 to 1. One of the goals that we had when we developed this technology, and we actually have a 5-year grant from NIH, which really focused on developing, you know, post-exposure treatments and therapies against Ebola, you know, was really targeting being able to protect not just one type of Ebola, but, you know, all the strains that could pop up, because you can't predict. I mean, there's no way to predict accurately, you know, something could pop up tomorrow and it could be one of the other strains.
Yeah, that's
one of the other things that we're really trying to focus on now too is you know, changing you know, optimizing the technology. You know, we're using the doses like 25 milligrams per kilogram to protect the monkeys, but you know, these are really expensive drugs to make, and can we lower the dose? You know, would this work at 5 mg/kg? And then you can extend the amount of people, the coverage, 5 times.
That was University of Texas researcher Thomas Gisbert speaking with VOA's Paul Alexander. A Kenyan court says 3 men must stand trial for their alleged role in the 2013 terrorist attack on Nairobi's Westgate Mall. The suspects are accused of aiding the Somali-based militant group Al-Shabaab. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The suspects were in the Nairobi courtroom Monday as Chief Magistrate Francis Andayi read the ruling.
The 4 accused persons here are charged with a total of 12 counts, some jointly and others separately. They are jointly charged in counts 1 and 2 with commission of a terrorist act and conspiracy to commit a terrorist act, respectively, contrary to the Prevention of Terrorism Act.
The suspects Liban Abdullahi, Hussein Mustafa and Ahmed Abdi are also charged with giving support to a terrorist group, aiding a terrorist group and being in the country illegally. A 4th suspect was set free. Gunmen opened fire on shoppers in the busy Westgate Mall on a Saturday in September 2013, killing at least 67 people and injuring more than 150 others. The gunmen are believed to have died when the Kenyan army retook the mall. Abdullahi, Mustafa and Abdi were arrested in the weeks following the attack. 31-year-old John Wangombe survived the attack. He welcomed the news that finally someone is going to be put on trial.
I feel good. I'm very joyful because of the way the court has ruled. We expect justice for us, for what we went through, the whole scenario. And I give thanks to the court. Sometimes they take time to check on cases, but this one was definitely a good part for me. Definitely, we expect justice. The court has reformed these days, and we expect those suspects to go to jail.
Prosecutors spent more than 5 years gathering evidence against the men, in part because more than 145 witnesses offered testimony. Only 2 suspects brought before Kenyan court on terrorism-related charges have been convicted, and many Kenyans fear this case may also fall apart. But lawyer Danstan Omari says it will be difficult for the suspects to walk free.
The state has proved a watertight case. It is their story that the court is going to listen. Rarely do people who reach that stage get acquitted. Most of them, they end up being convicted.
The 3 defendants will appear in court again next week as the defense begins to present its case. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Past the hour, you were listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir says He will not step down, saying the government will not change because of protests. In a televised speech today in front of hundreds of cheering supporters, Bashir said the country's economic problems could not be solved by what he called vandalism. The speech comes after nearly a month of anti-government protests as anger continues to build over rising prices for bread and other basic goods. The government says at least 24 people have died in the protests, including two members of the security forces, but human rights groups say more than 40 have died. A senior program assistant with the U.S. Institute of Peace for Sudan and South Sudan programs says the protests will continue as long as President Bashir refuses to step down. Mohideen Omar spoke with our colleague, Carol Van Damme.
This is a structural, political, and economic problem that the country is facing. So the best way for them to address this issue, I think, is for the president to step down.
Part of that problem, too, is when South Sudan broke away, and they have the oil reserves, right?
Definitely, yeah. That's one of their main sources of income, and they lost that. The government lost the opportunity to diversify its economy, and now it's too late to try to do that. And it's almost impossible to do that under the current government. So I don't think there will be tangible changes in the next few months or next year, because the same people who caused the problem are still in charge of the country. The protesters are demanding that the government completely changes its behavior and the president just goes. And I think that's the best way to address the problem.
Bashir told the crowd he will not resign, saying those seeking power need to do so through free and fair elections. What's your response to that?
Well, as if he came to power in a free and fair election. This is the guy who came to power through a military coup. He doesn't know anything about free and fair election to begin with. And secondly, I don't think people have patience to wait until free election, as he would call it, in 2020. Those problems need to be addressed right now, immediately. And can the government does that? I don't know. The government can't. I don't know if they can do that.
How are these protests different from the ones that we have seen before in their protests against Bashir's rule, which has been going on for 29 years now, including the government attacks against the people of Darfur, Blue Nile State, Nuba Mountains? We've seen these kinds of protests before in the streets of Sudan, in Khartoum, and somehow he's been able to stay in control. Why is it different now?
Oh, definitely. One thing I would point out to is that this time the protests are across Sudan. It's not just isolated one city or one town. It's across Sudan. About 2 days ago, there was a huge protest. They call it a million people participation protest in Al-Ghadarif. In that protest, millions actually people participated in that protest, according to some reports. And the next day, there was protest in Khartoum, in upper north part of the country, in the center, in Darfur, in all parts of the Sudan. We haven't seen that in Sudan for the last few years. So the difference is that the energy, the participation is day after day increasing. So that's one difference. The second is that people are able to communicate actively between participants in different states using social media platforms and other communication platforms. So we see that today happening across the country, and not only young people from universities participating, also elder people participating, young people, kids are participating in this protest.
And that's different from previous protests?
Definitely. It's different.
The thing is, it's a fact that he was indicted on war crimes and crimes against humanity years ago, and he's even traveled outside of Sudan, gone to these other countries. Nobody has arrested him. He seems to be the Teflon man. Do you think he's really going to, this is going to be his come down this time?
I definitely believe so, because the condition is just different than what we have seen in the past. Right now, what you see is that you see a greater participation in the protests, number one. And number two, the political dynamic in the region has shifted in the last few years. also the ability of the president to influence events in the region has completely shifted. Because as you mentioned earlier, he has lost his main source of income, which is the oil.
That's Mahdin Omar, Senior Program Assistant with the U.S. Institute of Peace on Sudan and South Sudan, speaking to VOA's Carol Van Damme. Hundreds of Zimbabweans took to the streets of Harare today, protesting an increase in the price of fuel. As Columbus Mavunga reports, many Zimbabweans are growing tired of chronic economic hardship.
The protesters said they wanted to force the government to address Zimbabwe's moribund economy. Simbai Rice, one of the demonstrators, said the administration has failed to address increasing shortages of cash and basic food items. He said President Emmerson Mnangagwa had promised to rescue the situation when he took over from Robert Mugabe in November 2017. The economy is off rails. I wish the leaders should address the economy, especially fuel prices and the price of basic commodities. They should just come down, said Rice. People are not happy. My bus fare is now $5 from a dollar. I'm now going home on foot. If there's a way, he must return today and solve this. President Mnangagwa left Zimbabwe Monday to visit Russia, Kazakhstan, Belarus, and Azerbaijan. He is expected to return home after attending the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. The forum takes place from January 22 through January 25. On Monday, the army and police deployed in Harare after protesters started blocking roads. Other protests took place in the country's second largest city, Bulawayo. Police in both places fired tear gas to disperse demonstrators. The government says it is aware that prices have been escalating and forcing many people to slide into poverty. Energy Mutodi, Zimbabwe's junior minister of information, said the government is doing all it can.
We are equally worried, just like any other citizen. So there's no way, there's nothing which government can do to stop fuel price increases. In actual fact, we've been the country selling fuel at the lowest prices in the region. So what we are trying to do as government is that the fuel prices have been adjusted upwards. We intend to ensure that the fuel supply situation is normalized.
He also said the government cannot increase salaries for public workers like doctors and school teachers. Over the past weeks, some government workers have said they want to be paid in US dollars or have their salaries match price increases. They are saying the depreciating local currency, called bond notes, is leaving them without disposable income. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi repeatedly has said he will not stay after his second term ends and that he is committed to two-term limit stipulated by the Constitution of 2014. However, several movements are calling for an amendment to the Constitution regarding presidential term limits. Recently, six Egyptian lawyers filed a lawsuit to extend the number of terms to three. If approved, the president would be able to run in the 2020 elections. Mohamed Anwar al-Sadat is the president of the Development and Reform Party in Egypt. He explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed al-Shenawi what the campaign could mean for the future of democracy in Egypt.
Honestly, we all have been following some articles from some of those writers who are close to the president, whom they start to, you know, send messages that they recommend such kind of amendments is necessary. for the president to continue what he started. We don't see any point, especially that the president himself have expressed his clear position that he have no intention to continue after his second term. So it's a bit of surprise. I don't know if the president have changed his mind or if those people are actually trying to compliment him by making such kind of campaign.
Is there any response from the president or the presidency to such campaign?
No, so far we haven't heard anything from him or from any of the official, let's say, institutions or bodies. So far, nothing, complete silence. So I think they are maybe testing to see the reaction. This is the constitution which the president have been elected, and he have been sworn to respect this constitution. So I don't see how they are going to overcome, especially a very clear articles in the constitution, Article 226, which is stating very clearly that no one to touch this timing or period of the president, you know. But it looks like that there is something going on. Nobody knows exactly where or who is handling this. But we are all, you know, waiting to see how they are going to promote this.
You expressed your concern that if such amendment is approved by the parliament, there would be no room for the peaceful rotation of power. How serious is such campaign to the future of democracy in Egypt?
The only positive thing we have as Egyptian gained from the revolution in 2011 was this article that we will not see a president for lifetime, that we will see a peaceful transfer of power. And this is what we all have hoped to see in Egypt as a civil, modern state. So if they will change this now, it means we are back again to not only to square one, we are back 100 years. So we in Egypt would love to see a real peaceful transformation of power based on free and fair elections. So let's wait and see what will happen, because honestly, the parliament, no one count much on the parliament, because we know how the parliament is functioning.
Mr. Sadat, you pointed out in your statement to the notion of creating a transitional council to protect the state and the revolution goals after the second term of President Sisi. Who is suggesting that and why?
Actually, this is something new. It was suggested by Mr. Yasser Rizk. He is the chairman of one of our national newspaper, Akhbar El Youm. And we know that Yasser is very close, actually, to the president and to the establishment in general. So if he is coming up with this, it looks like that they are really considering something like this to avoid amending the Article 140. So they are coming up with this kind of supreme counselor to protect the country and the revolution, something similar to what we have in Iran, you know. But again, I think they are trying to find ways, means, not to upset people inside. And also maybe there will be also some critics from outside, from the West in general. You know.
That was Mohammed Anwar El Sadat, president of the Development and Reform Party in Egypt. He spoke to my colleague Mohammed El Shenawi. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
Of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, award-winning author and journalist Maggie Jackson will discuss some of the distractions caused by our technology-centered modern lives, such as driving while texting, which can lead to road traffic accidents. She will also share some small steps to address these growing challenges. For your questions or comments, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
This evening on the sunny side.